Peterson from his mid-80s masterpiece, The State of the Tenor, Volumes 1 and 2. Before that, as I said, it's Don Byron and Guillermo Prime. The time is 6:39. You got to tune to WBOZ 90.7 FM in New Orleans. I want to welcome to the station Sally Asher and Veronica Russell. Welcome, you guys.
Hi, thank you.
You guys have a fascinating program that launches tomorrow night. It's called Notorious, More Tales from the Mascot, the famed scandal sheet of old New Orleans. This is at the U.S. Mint tomorrow night, October 10th, at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, the reception's at 6:30 with cupcakes from Cake Cafe, rum from Pravda, and beer from Nola Brewing. It's a free reception from 6:30 to 7. And we will have copies of the Mint on display. Copies of the Mascot at the Mint.
There you go.
It's been a long day.
Tell us more about what the Mascot was. A newspaper, magazine of sorts?
The Mascot was a weekly illustrated newspaper that ran every Saturday from 1882 to 1897. It was the only illustrated newspaper of prominence of New Orleans at that time. And it was actually ended up being the largest illustrated journal in the South. It was distributed in Mississippi and Alabama, as well as Louisiana.
Wow. And it was basically a weekly newspaper?
It was every Saturday, five cents.
And you mentioned, it started as sort of a forum for political discussion, but became other things, right?
Yeah, its original intention was kind of muckraking before yellow journalism. It was very, very political, due by editors being killed or dying. It changed hands quite a bit, and then kind of around 1889 to 1890, it ended up being a lot more focused on sex and crime stories.
Well, how about that?
Yeah.
I guess they figured out what sells. Did you say editors were killed?
Yes.
Wow.
And killed as well.
That's great.
There was actually two shootings in the Mascot office. Mm-hmm. One was the state tax collector and the former criminal sheriff came in with guns and started shooting up the office. And the editor killed the former criminal sheriff. And the other one was a disgruntled 22-year-old that they wrote about from Algiers who came over and shot and killed the editor in the Mascot office.
Wow. And this is basically 1890s?
That was in the early 1880s.
Okay.
In 1891, actually, in regards to the Hennessy lynchings, with one of the reporters had written about it, the former police chief, they got into a gun battle in the street and killed one of the reporters.
Wow. So tomorrow night you guys are going to be, what exactly will be happening with the Mascot, your work with the Mascot tomorrow night?
It's going to be somewhat interactive. I'll be talking about the Mascot and I'll be showing slides. And then Veronica Russell, Andrew Ward, and Trixie Meeks will be doing dramatic readings to kind of supplement. We'll be reading from the Mascot, from legal court cases, from other newspapers writing about the Mascot. I did the lecture in May at the Cabildo, and it's touching on topics that I spoke about before, but kind of expanding it. And 90% of what the readers read is going to be all new.
It sounds incredible. Where did you find the Mascot? How did you find out about it?
Originally, I was looking at Al Rose's book, Storyville, and a lot of scholars actually reference the Mascot, use it as source, but have never written about it, which I discovered. So I went in and I started looking at some of the images and started using them as silk screens on some of my art.
Wow.
And then I love the articles and thought it'd be great to write an article on kind of social scandals of the Gilded Age of New Orleans, which can range from a woman showing her ankles to, you know, a father getting drunk at a wedding, which was a huge deal. And then I realized that what I wanted to do was actually write about the Mascot. And kind of under Joel Dinnerston, who I was doing this independent project, he encouraged it. And then when I kind of started digging deep, I realized that not only was it not written about, but the very few things that it was written about was incorrect. So it's always kind of exciting to find virgin material. But it's also frustrating because you study it and you have no idea how it ends. You know, you read something in the article, okay, he got shot in the leg what happened? You know, you don't know. You find out 15 days later he died, or they went to jail. And so it's extremely exciting, and realizing when I started to study it that newspapers across the country wrote about the Mascot. I mean, it was in headlines in the New York Times and the Los Angeles Herald, and really sparked a debate on, you know, freedom of the press versus the licentiousness of the press. And this was during a time that we're coming out of the Civil War, and before that, Louisiana didn't really have any kind of legal. Before, basically, you had a problem, you went on the battlefield. and you dueled. So libel was basically becoming new at this time, and editors were taking their lives in their own hands every time they wrote something. And the mascot bashed everyone, And it was a little difficult for public and private citizens to get over. They loved it. You know, everybody kind of got very excited every week, but there was also this state of fear, like, are they going to write about me?
Right.
And the local mayor of New Orleans at the time was Joseph Shakespeare, and he actually ordered the chief of police to seize and destroy the newspaper and arrest everyone involved in the publication. And never before had this ever happened. And the president of the Carrollton Railroads got an injunction that the mascot was not even allowed to write about him, which had also never happened. And they did, of course, worse than before. And basically, they got they went to contempt of court for it. And it is down in a legal case history that in no modern court in England or United States had there ever been an injunction filed preventing a newspaper in advance to write about someone.
Wow. Folks visiting with Sally Asher, she'll be presenting her program tomorrow evening at the U.S. Mint, 7 p.m., Wednesday, October 10th, an interactive lecture and display all related to this extraordinary New Orleans periodical, The Mascot, 1880s and 90s. So drop by and check it out. Veronica Russell, you have come with Sally, and you'll be part of the proceedings tomorrow night, right?
Yes, I'm a local actor and costume designer, and I'm involved with a company called Louisiana History Alive. And Sally had asked me to be one of the readers, and part of what we do is we're doing actual verbatim readings from texts, articles in The Mascot. Some of the court cases that were tried, we're reading transcripts in character, and it's really interesting. I was really surprised because I'm an actor. I'm accustomed to theatricality and people making things as whiz bang as they can. I was really surprised when we did the show back in. I call it a show. When she gave the talk back in May, she said that nobody had ever done that before for any sort of you know, research talk. They'd never had anybody come in and read source material out loud. And I was like, why not? I mean, it just seemed like such a no-brainer to me. When she told me what we were going to do, I knew immediately. I was like, oh, yeah, I'll totally do that. And she's like, everybody's kind of freaking out because nobody's ever done this before.
I was really surprised. We had a lot of historians and scholars in there, and they were like, that's genius.
That's groundbreaking.
And then, can we have her? can we use her? And I was like, well, she actually does this.
Fantastic. Well, yeah.
She does bang on Josie Arlington, by the way.
Well, if you're going to give us a little sample of The Mascot, that we're going to, folks, this is Veronica Russell, again, appearing part of the program tomorrow night at the U.S. Mint, Wednesday, October 10th at 7 o'clock, a big presentation about The Mascot.
Yes, this is an excerpt from an article that was originally published on November 12th, 1892, issue of The Mascot. The headline is, "He was a woman. A workhouse keeper strips a male prisoner and finds a female. Parish prison officials and workhouse keepers have many strange experiences, yet seldom any as surprising as one which occurred at the workhouse last Tuesday evening. Amongst the batch of unfortunate prisoners were two named Frank Martin and William Collins, who were sent down for 30 days for being drunk, fighting, and disturbing the peace. On Monday night, the two had a quarrel on the levee, and Martin, who was a one-legged cripple, got the worst of it. Officer Schaefer appeared upon the scene and took the pair in. They remained in the station all night. The others in the station noticed the feminine voice of Collins and thought he was one of those normal freaks of nature. Next morning, the recorder fined them $10 apiece, or in default, 30 days in the workhouse. The $20 being wanting, they took a ride to the workhouse. It is there that the custom to make incomers take a bath, with a view to the exclusion of vermin. A keeper bade them strip off. The others obeyed, but Collins objected. Unused to dissent, the keeper unbuttoned his coat and vest and started to pull it off. Imagine his surprise when a couple of plump breasts popped out. He was genuinely startled. The other prisoners were greatly interested, and the keeper expressed some difficulty in deterring them from closer and fuller investigation. It was evident that Collins was a woman, and a healthy young one at that. The cripple who had spent the preceding night in a cell with her fainted, either from surprise or chagrin at the thought of what he might have missed. A dose of whiskey brought him to, seeing which remedy some of the others essayed fainting, but without the same alcoholic reward. The masquerade was taken into the women's department and given a change of female attire. When interrogated, she stated that she was 25 years of age, having been married about 12 years ago in Chicago when she was but 13. Her husband was a mechanic and turned out utterly worthless, never staying long in one place, but being always on the moves. At the Scranton, Pennsylvania depot, she gave him the slip one day about 9 years ago and has not seen him or heard of him since. She's still young and good-looking and might suit some of them who wish to marry the $30,000 widow. Above is an illustration of the scene when the keeper pulled off her coat and exposed her feminine charms.
Very great. Thank you so much. Well, that's Veronica Russell reading from the New Orleans weekly newspaper, The Mascot, and she'll be in a presentation tomorrow night with Sally Asher. Again, this is the U.S. Mint at 7 o'clock, Wednesday, October 10th. A bunch of readings and a program presentation, lecture, and performance, all related to the notorious old scandal sheet of old New Orleans, The Mascot. Thanks so much for coming by, folks. And,
thank you.
And I
would just like to say the after parties at Pravda. I always like having after parties for historical lectures. So if you want to come early for free cupcakes and beer and rum, that's at 6:30. And afterward, we'll be going to Pravda to enjoy some more.
All right. Thanks so much. Have a wonderful time tomorrow night, folks.
Great. Thank you.
Folks, the time is 6:50, and Jive and Gina Neal are here to deliver their 1950s Rhythm and Blues program. It'll be a wang dang doodle, to be sure. We'll take you up at the 7 o'clock hour with Steve Coleman, an album, The Deaf Trance Beat, and we'll hear a tune called Patterns of Force. My name is T.R. Johnson. It's been a great pleasure to spin the best of the new releases, as well as some neglected classics for you since 4 o'clock, as is the habit every Tuesday afternoon, and I will see you in the future.
Thank you so much. That was great.
Perfect. Well, what a great project.